In the academic world, cognitive science refers only to what might be considered conventional or orthodox processes in the brain and in the mind. And from that point of view, the brain is equivalent to the mind. In other words, the brain generates the mind, or what we think of as consciousness. That's the standard neuroscience point of view, and it's not without good reason. There's an enormous amount of evidence that the brain and consciousness are related in some way. I think what the mistake is, though, that the assumption is that that's all there is, that the brain is literally generating consciousness, and consciousness then is nothing else. But all of the evidence for mind-matter interactions, for remote viewing and similar effects, strongly suggests that the brain may generate consciousness, but consciousness also can do other things. So it's, the brain is not the entire answer. It's a big part of the answer, but it's not the whole answer yet.
I agree, because those scientists, Dean, would then assume that if the brain generates consciousness upon death, the brain therefore stops to function, therefore consciousness doesn't exist for that being anymore.
That's correct. Yeah, that would be the mainstream view.
And I think what you're beginning to prove, and others who recognize what you do, that consciousness may be an entirely different phenomenon.
Well, one way I think of it is that up until about a century ago, most people thought that matter and energy were two separate things. And then Einstein came along with his special theory of relativity, the famous equation E equals mc squared, and showed that the equal sign says that these are the energy and matter are actually the same thing in different forms. So just in the same way that ice and water and steam are the same thing in different phases, I can kind of project sometime in the future, maybe decades, in which we see that matter, energy, and mind are all part of a continuum, in which case this is, in a sense, what science is trying to do. It tries to unify apparently different things to create this a grand unified theory of how everything fits together. And at present, one of the reasons why the neurosciences discount consciousness as a real thing is because it seems dualistic. You know, you have a brain, a physical hunk of stuff, and then you have consciousness, which seems very ephemeral and very different in type. And this dualism is an uncomfortable topic in science. Science wants to unify. So I think the unification, given the evidence that consciousness is a real thing, one way to think of it is matter, energy, and mind.
You've been conducting some experiments. Tell us a little bit about some of your work.
Okay. When we normally think of mind-matter interaction, I've coined this term of mind-matter interaction of the first kind. And this is when you have mind directed at matter, mind directly at matter. So a mental effect on healing, say, or a mental effect on dice or on cell cultures or plants or water and a bunch of other things. Mind-matter interaction of the second kind would be mind directly on energy. And here we're talking about mental effects on light or mental effects on radioactive decay or random events.
Okay.
The third kind we might call mental effects on space itself. And here, this is more speculative, but it's the notion that you can condition space through long-term intention. And this is most frequently thought of at sacred sites, things like the Great Pyramids or Devil's Tower, or places where ceremonies are conducted. We've done studies using random number generators simply placed at these sites, and they don't behave quite as randomly as they ought to, which suggests that there is the possibility of conditioning space in some way. The mind-matter interaction of the fourth kind is mind influencing some form of matter, which then in turn influences something else. And here I'm referring to something that the material scientist Bill Tiller has developed. He calls it an intentionally imprinted electronic device. This is an electronic device which is a fairly simple circuit, but it's put into the vicinity of people who are meditating on a specific intention, and it's running while they're meditating for this intention. Then they turn the device off, they place the device somewhere else, and then turn it back on, and see whether the intention is, in effect, radiated out from that place. So Bill has reported a number of very interesting experiments suggesting that a device can capture intention, and it can make physical things do things that they wouldn't otherwise do.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so that leads to a new category that I'm studying now, which is mind-matter interaction of the fifth kind, which is mental influence of food as a material substance, which in turn affects behavior, or affects, and this specifically affects mood.
All right, explain that one.
Okay, so this comes about from a number of different directions. One is, if you pay attention to the consequences of global warming, there are many difficult things that we face. One of them is that fresh water is going to become more and more difficult to get.
True.
The second, then, is that food is going to be more and more difficult to get. So we're talking about hundreds of millions of people going hungry. And that suggests that we probably ought to pay attention to what we know about nutrition to see if we can better understand the nature of why we eat food and what food is doing for us.
A global study just released yesterday, Dean, said that by 2080, 200 to 600 million people could starve.
There you go.
Yep.
So that suggests we either let them starve or we need to figure out some better way of enhancing our food. So when you think about then, well, why do we eat all this food? And the usual answer is that we eat it because we get energy mm-hmm. from it. But that's not quite right. We get energy from all kinds of places. It's not that we're getting energy. We're getting a specific kind of energy. We're getting a coherent energy or an ordered energy. Well, what do I mean by that? By analogy, say that somebody is listening to our voices over a 10,000-watt radio broadcast transmitter.
Right.
That's a certain amount of energy being pushed out into
yep.
the atmosphere. Well, the station could be playing static, just noise,
mm-hmm.
or they could be playing music and voices. The amount of power in both cases is the same. But in one case, you have a completely random pattern, and in the other case, you have an orderly pattern, which carries information. So what I'm talking about then in terms of a coherent type of energy is the equivalent of the informational form. It's a form of information or energetic information that has a certain structure in it, coherent structure, and that's what we actually need.